Ganley, and this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Late last month, Pope Francis clearly outlined his agenda for the Catholic Church, centered around what he's been talking about since he was elected in March, a renewed focus on the world's poor. This teaching document, called Evangelii Gaudium, deplores what it calls the dictatorship of the global economy, for example, lamenting that we don't consider it news when an elderly person dies of exposure, but that it is news when the stock market loses 2 points. But while many applaud the new pope's words, others question his commitment to the issues that have appeared to preoccupy the Catholic Church: abortion, contraception, and gay marriage. The criticisms and praise nonetheless promote a discussion around the world that has drawn in Catholics and non-Catholics alike. And after years of trouble for the church, including declining attendance in the developed world and the child sex abuse scandal, many are enthusiastic about a forward-looking conversation. Today in The Exchange, papal popularity, what this new pope has been saying, and why it's made waves around the world. Let's hear from you. Are you a practicing Catholic? What's your reaction to the pope? If you're a lapsed Catholic or practice another faith, what does the pope's message mean to you? And in today's world, how much do the pope's words still matter? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email. Keep it short. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. Or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests for the hour. With me in studio, Bishop Peter Labashi, 10th Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Manchester, which covers the entire state of New Hampshire. He's been in that post for 2 years. And Bishop Labashi, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Also joining us from New York City is David Gibson. He's a national reporter for Religion News Service covering the Catholic Church. David has written 2 books on Catholic topics, recently a biography of Pope Benedict. And David Gibson, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good to be here.
And also joining us from UNH is Michelle Dillon. She's a sociology professor there. Her research interests include American Catholics. The book Michelle co-authored this year is American Catholics in Transition. And Michelle, a big welcome back. Thanks for
your time. Thank you, Laura. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Bishop Labashi, I want to start with you, but I want to hear from everybody. So it's been about 8 months since Francis was chosen as Pope. Seems to have captivated world attention. How come, Bishop Labashi?
Well, it's very interesting that when his name was announced from the loggia, people just see, so they looked at each other and said, well, who? But that is no longer an issue. He is very, very well known, very recognizable. He seems to be a man who wants to be among the people in the closest ways possible, and people are responding to that. He is approachable. He speaks in a way that people can understand common parlance. It's a wonderful experience, a new beginning, I think, for so many who may have wondered, does the church have something to say to me now in my present day? And I think the Holy Father has shown that we do.
There were a lot of firsts with this pope, too, weren't there, Bishop Labashi? Just remind us.
In many ways, coming from Latin America, he is the first pope from the southern hemisphere of Latin America. He comes to us as an Italian and an Argentinian, which is also very, very, very appropriate, I think, for a world that is seeing immigration as a very, very big issue. And to see that a man who is of the people really appreciates his roots and is glad to bring that to the work of the church.
What do you think, David Gibson? You were there when this new pope was chosen in Rome. Why do you think he's captured so much attention, not just from Catholics, but non-Catholics too?
Well, I think it's also because I think he points to himself and by extension to the church as the starting place for this new approach that the bishop was talking about. In one of his longest, more famous interviews, they said, you know, who is Pope Francis? Tell us. He said, I am a sinner. That's how he starts out everything. He says, we have to begin with ourselves and we in the church, and we have to say that, you know, we need to look at what we can do personally. Look at his lifestyle. Look at the way he's, you know, he lives in the Vatican guest house there, which is kind of just a, you know, sort of souped up Motel 8 in the Vatican. You know, it's a nice real estate, but it is, pardon me, it's, you know, it's not in the apostolic palaces. He's driving a very simple car around when he has to go places. He's walking the walk. He's not just talking the talk. And people respond to that in today's world.
Michelle Dillon, to you, we've talked about his style and how he tries to live simply and reach out to the common folk. What is it that Pope Francis is saying that's got everybody watching and paying attention?
Well, he's saying a lot of things, and I think in particular what he's been saying, and this goes to the interview that David just mentioned, is he emphasized the importance also of community. And community is a core value for the Catholic tradition. It's a core value for many other traditions also. But I think one of the recurring themes, as I see it, through all his speeches and all his smaller statements, is really that he wants to re-energize the Catholic Church as a community, because it is a global, transnational community. It's also very much, of course, a local parish community. And he's really speaking to that unit as such, that we're all part of this. If you're Catholic, it's an inclusive community. It's Catholic with a small c, meaning it's pluralistic. There are many diverse people with different beliefs, different backgrounds. And I think really what I see him and what makes it so attractive, I think, to so many people is that he really wants to rebuild that community and make it a real community, not just some abstract notion, but to make it really matter in people's lives.
And I'm sure that is important to Catholics. I'm wondering, Michelle, about non-Catholics, though. I mean, they're paying attention, too, to what the Pope says.
Yes, and I think, of course, we live, you know, it's a media age. It has been for many decades now, and certainly going back to John Paul, who very much was a media celebrity, Benedict less so. Certainly he has gotten a lot of publicity, and non-Catholics, you know, are interested in him as a global figure, and I think they have to be aware, based on so much of the coverage, is that he looks differently. He has this humility, as the bishop mentioned, when he first came out on the St. Peter's Basilica after he was elected, you know, he spoke with such humility, those first words. People note these things, whether you're Catholic or non-Catholic, so just looking at his style, and then, of course, his speeches have gotten a lot of attention, in particular, as, you know, we've discussed other times in the media, his emphasis that the Church needs to not necessarily shift its priorities, but to give more attention to some of the priorities that have gotten lost over the last few decades.
Yeah, and that was the obsession comment that made so many headlines. And I definitely want to ask all of you about this. But one more question on this point about not just the Catholic world, Bishop Labashi, but non-Catholics. How much does it matter in the rest of the world, those who aren't Catholic? How much do you think the Pope's words hold sway? How much does it matter to leaders of the U.S. or Asia or Europe or Africa what this Pope says?
That's a good question, Laura. I think because the Holy Father is one Holy Father, we only have one Pope at a time. And because he is a spokesperson and the leader of such a world body of believers, and because he speaks of faith, every culture, everyone is looking to see, what is this man? What does he want to do? What is he going to do? How does he lead? And I think people want to go beyond themselves in many instances. They are looking for a brighter future, a better future. Can this man be a sign of hope for a bigger world? I think that's been an important issue. In every papacy, they look, what's going on? How will this affect me? How will this affect us? And I do believe that what people are looking for is that sign of hope. And he is bringing that in a very, very special way.
What do you think, David Gibson, on that? Again, the interest in the non-Catholic world in what this Pope says, and whether it really matters or whether it's just a matter of interest.
No, I think it really does matter. I mean, on a practical level, it's a question of, again, our common polity, are people going to get along? Are we going to be able to find common ground for common action? As you know, the Catholic Church and the secular world have often been seen as so much at odds in recent years, especially in our own politics. And, you know, by giving the Catholic Church through the Pope a new hearing, are people going to be able to listen to what the Catholic Church has to say, you know, on various and a variety of issues, many of them real hot-button issues? And conversely, is the Catholic Church going to be listening and dialoguing with other parts of the community? I think that's a real, you know, a real novelty that the Pope has done by trying to bridge these two groups. I mean, it was really interesting. I was there at the Vatican, and he was meeting with journalists 2 days after his election. And there were like 5,000 of us. We called it the feeding of the 5,000 when they had media briefings, you know.
Did they break out fishes and loaves, David?
Exactly. The tidbits you need to throw to the journalist to keep us happy. But it was a fascinating meeting, and he just put down his prepared papers, and he was just telling us some stories and the whole thing. And then he came to the end to give his apostolic blessing, and he said, listen, I know many of you are not Catholic, and perhaps many of you are not even believers. He said, I'm not, in respect of your conscience, I'm not going to, physically give you the apostolic blessing, make the sign of the cross, but you'll know you have it from my heart. And it was just a really stunning moment for anybody who's been, around the Catholic world or around popes, as I've been lucky to do, that he would kind of make that humble gesture in respect of people who do not believe what he believes. And I think that was a real early sign that he wanted to reach out.
Again, that's David Gibson, reporter for Religion News Service. Also with us, Michelle Dillon, sociology professor at UNH, and Bishop Peter Labashi. We invite your questions and comments as we look at some of the words and sayings of the new pope and how they have created headlines around the world, captured the interest of the Catholic and non-Catholic world alike. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Michelle Dillon, to you, getting back to what you said, Pope Francis got a lot of attention for his obsession comment. Just remind us what that was all about.
Well, he, a few months ago, commented that in the larger context of talking about who he is and what he wants for the Church, he commented that the Church has to move away from its obsession with talking about abortion, gay marriage, gay rights, contraception, these issues that, of course, a lot of ordinary people on the street would have been exactly saying this for many years, that the Church should focus more on some of the social justice, poverty-related issues, rather than always sort of pounding the drum on sexuality. And, of course, this got this whole discourse on contraception got resurrected basically a couple of years ago by Bishop Dolan, particularly and with his leadership of the National Conference of Bishops, with respect to the health Obamacare, so-called Obamacare, and the mandatory coverage for contraception. Contraception has been a moot issue within the Catholic Church, really, going back to the late 1960s. And so it came back into public dialogue, including in the Church. So it had many Catholics scratching their heads, even those who wouldn't necessarily be wondering about why the Church is saying so much, for example, on issues got to do with abortion. And then, of course, in recent years, with the whole changing legal and cultural momentum in favor of same-sex marriage, that has certainly energized the bishops in terms of advocacy against it. So,
and Michelle, I'm going to cut you off there, but we will pick up after a super short break, and we'll start taking your calls as well. So stay with us.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. When you donate your old vehicle to NHPR by December 31st, you receive a $50 gas gift card. Give us a call. We'll take care of all the paperwork and pick up your vehicle. You get a tax deduction and, for a limited time, a $50 gas gift card. Plus, you're supporting your New Hampshire News Service. Get things started now with a phone call to 1-877-393-NHPR or visit nhpr.org. More on a new pope, new hope on the exchange, and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, a cross-state battle over air pollution from the Midwest. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Liberty Utilities, sponsors of button-up New Hampshire energy-saving workshops, including one at Breathe New Hampshire in Manchester, December 11th. Details at breathenh.org. And Waste Management. In 2009, Waste Management recycled enough waste to fill the Empire State Building 12 and a half times. Information on how this is done at thinkgreen.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Pope Francis's words spark conversations around the world. We're getting a Granite State response, Catholic and non-Catholic alike. We want to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Michelle Dillon, just before the break, you were talking about, again, this comment that Pope Francis made a couple months back, saying that some church leaders have been, what he said, obsessed with issues like homosexuality, abortion, contraception. And you were talking about the reaction to that. What did you make of the language, Michelle? Obsession, that's pretty tough.
Well, I think the language was so populist. We don't usually in formal discourse talk about someone's obsession, and for a pope to say that about his own fellow bishops was really quite startling. But I think that's part of the attraction of this pope to a lot of Catholics and non-Catholics alike, is that he speaks in everyday terms, and all of his other speeches too. I mean, he certainly is very eloquent in his speech, but he uses very ordinary language because he wants to communicate. He wants the people to realize that the church is supposed to be relevant in everyday life. It's not some abstract structure in the Vatican in Rome. And so I think that's what really connected a lot of people to it, was the content, but how it was said.
Yeah, and what do you think, Bishop Labashe? I'm very curious to hear how you felt when you heard the Pope say that we've been obsessed with these issues and we really need to focus on the poor.
I appreciate what Michelle said, the importance of a word, how startling, how it really sets us back, how it takes us by surprise. It's disarming. What do we do? What does he mean by that? And that's great. And I think what he wanted to do is to point out that we have to be comprehensive in our proclaiming of the gospel. And we can never lose focus on any part of the gospel. Everything is important. So what he wanted us to do, I believe, is say, yes, you must continue to speak out and work for these important issues, the sanctity of human life, the dignity of human life. So he will want us to continue to speak about the evils of abortion, the evils of euthanasia, and many other things. He will also say, but yes, there is another evil, and we must also recognize that the dignity of human life is a continuum of life. So when we say from conception to natural death, there's an awful lot that happens in between that too, that we have to be utterly aware of. A society that tries to build itself on the backs of the poor is a society that is going to find itself in serious trouble. The poor are the people of God. The wealthy are the people of God. Every stratum of society is the people of God. And the Holy Father wants us to be very, very attuned, I believe, to the dignity of the human person, to the care of the human person. And so it's going to be proclaiming social justice. It's going to be proclaiming the moral imperatives that we have had in our tradition from the very beginnings. And we don't compromise on these things, but we don't leave out those things that perhaps can be eclipsed.
How do you feel about the criticism inherent in the Pope's words, Bishop Labashe, that those interests of the poor, of the dispossessed, of the downtrodden have been left out? Do you think he's right on that?
I believe that in some cases, it's been difficult to bring that to the fore. There are many, many waves of interest, many sensibilities. But it's very funny. I was speaking just a little bit ago that I brought a little book to the studio with me. I had gone for my master's degree after 15 years of priesthood. I said, I really got to go back to study. And one of the courses I took was 100 Years of Social Teaching. And here it is, that the church from Pope Leo XIII right straight through to Pope John Paul II, the many, many, many pronouncements, encyclicals, teachings, all have to do. So if you have 100 years of these wonderful teachings on economy and social justice, if perhaps, as we said in the classroom, I never heard this, I never knew this, I think that's the laboratory that says we've got to get more into this.
David Gibson, love your thoughts, and then we'll go to our callers. Go ahead, David.
Well, I think I agree very much with Bishop Labashe. I think he puts it very well. And I think what's important and what's perhaps attractive about this for so many people is the fact that this requires everyone, all Catholics and the Church, to live out this kind of social justice, to model this in their lives and the way the Church is structured. You probably saw one of the controversies recently about the bishop, and a young bishop in Germany who had this kind of lavish renovation of his rectory and the offices there, and he was kind of dismissed, sent on sabbatical. I think that's the kind of message that Pope Francis wants to send. Yeah, I was there again for that audience. He said, he just put down his papers and he said, how much I want a church that is poor and for the poor. He wants Catholics to live out this message of social justice. It's not just words, words, words. And I think so many of those issues that we were talking about, abortion, gay marriage, that kind of thing, can just sort of be verbal battles that we have. He wants to get down to brass tacks and have people live out the gospel and live out this message of social justice.
Let's take some calls, and then I have a lot more questions for all of you. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. As we look at the latest writings and teachings of the new Pope, we want to know what you think. If you're a practicing Catholic, what's your reaction to what the Pope has been saying? If you're a lapsed Catholic or practice another faith, what does the Pope's message mean to you? How much do you think it still matters in today's world what the Pope says? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Tim's been waiting in Corinth, Vermont. Tim, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay. First of all, let me warn you that I'm not here to make nice with anybody. I think that if anyone expects the church is going to reform in a big way, they need to take a very, very long view. They need, for example, to read the footnotes of John Ciardi's translation of the Divine Comedy to understand that the church is interested in power, okay? More recently, we need to look at the cover-up of the sex abuse scandals by bishops to understand that there is a texture of corruption in the Catholic Church that is very deep in the organization. And I'm going to try to end on a positive note by saying that this Pope, if he's serious, really has his work cut out for him.
Well, and I definitely, Tim, am going to talk about the recent action by Pope Francis on the child sex abuse scandal, including the criticism that some say it's not enough. Very quickly, though, Tim, if I could ask you, you say the church is not going to reform in a big way. Just super quick, what kind of reforms do you want to see?
Oh, well, just the sort of reforms that we're hearing the rhetoric from the current pontiff about.
Care for the poor and so forth.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Tim, thank you very much for calling in. No problem calling in with criticism. To you first, I think, Bishop Labashi, he's not convinced. I have read others who've said the church has an attractive spokesman for the same old message. What do you think?
I appreciate what he said, and I think it's very, very true what some people say. The proof is in the pudding. We want to see it occurring. We want to see it happening. And I believe the Holy Father, as many people are pointing to him, saying, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? He is turning around and pointing and saying, yeah, I'm doing this so that I will show you how to do it. And so we must take his words very seriously and put them into practice. One of the things that our caller said was about power. And immediately I thought of a prayer that is at one of the masses that we celebrate during the year. The opening prayer is, O God, you show your almighty power by your forgiveness and mercy. And I think that is a power that the church must continually strive, and the Holy Father would ask us to do. When he speaks about the sacrament of penance and confession, he says the priest must be there as a purveyor of mercy, of God's forgiveness, of reconciliation and healing. And I think it's a different kind of power that he wants us to be able to experience, the power to reconcile and have the kingdom of God available and approachable. And he's showing his power as Pope by his willingness to step down and sit with the people of God. So I think there are some nice things that we can accomplish if we're honest.
Tim, I appreciate the call. Again, you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You know, to his other point about the child sex abuse scandal, David Gibson, Pope Francis did take action recently. Some said it wasn't enough. What did he do, David?
Well, he just this past week set up a commission to kind of bring together experts, not just clerics, not just bishops and whatnot, but experts in this crisis from around the world who will attempt to try and set up some standards, some norms, some policies that bishops around the world need to follow as regards sexual abuse by priests and other church workers. You know, here in the United States, we've been obviously dealing with this issue for more than a decade, and the policies that the bishops have of the United States have put in to practice, while some may still criticize them, are frankly way ahead of where most of the rest of the world is. He needs to, restore some credibility to the church on this issue, but also find some uniformity to a degree around the world. This is a global problem and not just in the church. So he really wants to do that. But, you know, honestly, he does, and it's going to take some time. I mean, these, you know, he came into office, you know, in the midst of a great crisis in the church and in the Roman Curia, and he's got a lot to reform. He's got a lot on his plate, and this is certainly a priority for American Catholics, and he needs certainly to do more, and I think he is aware of that. I think accountability of bishops, how you're going to discipline bishops who do not necessarily follow the policies, and also just reaching out pastorally to abuse victims is, I think, something he's also stressing very much. That's very much in keeping with his, you know, his whole push to reach out to those on the margins, not just the comfortable folks in the sitting in the pews.
You know, I have to ask you about this, and I touched on it a minute ago, David. There have been some who've said, look, this is window dressing. It's not enough. One of your colleagues, this is John Allen at the National Catholic Reporter, said Francis is great on a lot of stuff but hasn't really done anything on sex abuse cases. Someone else from bishopaccountability.org said they're afraid this is going to be toothless and off target. You know, the last thing we need is yet another commission. What do you think? Is there enough teeth in this thing, David?
Well, that's just it. I think the bishop put it well. The proof is in the pudding. At this point, people, Catholics and non-Catholics, are so, you know, suspicious of the church on this topic in particular that they really want to see action. They're not going to give a pass to the church until they see real action. And it's going to take some doing. I mean, this is really turning around a cruise liner when you're talking about the global church. And I think there are two points to make. One is that, contrary, I think, to popular opinion, the Pope really isn't sort of like the president or the CEO of the church. He can't kind of micromanage every diocese or even every national bishops' conference. Like the bishop said, so much of what he does is going to be modeling, is basically trying to convince rather than command other bishops and other priests and everybody in the church to do as he is doing. So a lot of this is really him modeling what he thinks the best practices of the church should be. And, you know, that can be effective, but that's also going to take a while. It's a kind of a trickle-down model, if you will, of how ministry works. But you're going to have to see some real, some real concrete results in order to convince people.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, let's go to Alan in Madison. Hi, Alan, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention, I'm an atheist, but I have been paying a lot of attention to this new pope. He's been saying a lot of things that have been kind of making me sit up and take notice. The first thing that I noticed was when at Easter, when he ended up going and washing the feet of the female prisoners instead of the bishops, like is traditionally done for many years now. And there's like the instance of him kissing the man with leprosy. There's a picture of him kissing a man with leprosy. I just wanted to mention that, I kind of like what I'm hearing. I mean, it doesn't change my view on religion in general, but it's nice to see that some people on the other side are also believing some of the things that I believe in.
So to that question that I asked earlier, Alan, does it matter what this Pope says to people who aren't Catholic? You're saying, yes, indeed, it does.
It does. It's very important. I mean he's an important figure in the world. It matters.
Okay.
There's a large amount of inequality all across the world, and something has to be done about it. Someone needs to speak up.
Thank you very much for calling in, Alan. Michelle Dillon, your thoughts, and then Bishop Labashi, I can see you want to jump in, too. Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, on a few different things. Certainly, it takes a lot of time to bring about changes in the church, and whether with regards to sex abuse or the poor or any of the other issues, I think there has to be a greater recognition. I believe the Pope is bringing this, that there has to be oversight of the practices. There's already a lot of new changes in place, for example, in the U.S. and in other countries about sex abuse, but part of the problem is that they're not necessarily being enforced with the same rigor and diligence in every diocese. So this is where, rather than a commission, perhaps some Vatican official can literally be in charge as a czar going around to make sure that the procedures in place are being followed at the local level. I agree that the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and I think we have to have some patience, and I like to see evidence of outcomes, but I think we also have to have some patience at this stage, because the church really is in a great time of transition, and I think that takes discernment. What is the way forward? You know, the church is not going to change its teaching on abortion, but it can develop perhaps better pastoral ways of dealing with the abortion issue and dealing with women, whether they're Catholic or not, who have had abortion. So there's many difficult questions that need to be addressed, and I don't think you can implement change overnight. I mean, on some issues it's easier than others. So I think we have to welcome this shift in the church, the fact that there is a new pope and that he seems to open up new opportunities, but we have to be patient and wait and see, you know, how are these going to get implemented over time?
Yeah, what do you think, Bishop Blasio? I can see you want to jump in there.
I really do appreciate that, Michelle. That's wonderful. A whole culture cannot change just overnight. It has to grow, it has to evolve, and it has to be guided into that and the desire for growth. So that's perfect. I think what you've said is really caught it very, very well. And I want to just say a little bit about what Alan had said, and that is that indeed the joy of the gospel, as Pope Francis just wrote in his encyclical Evangelii Gaudium, the joy is that it does open up a moment of hope. It captures and it says, you know, there is something good here. So Alan, thanks for calling in. I do appreciate that earlier on.
Did you want to jump back in, Michelle?
Well, just yes, absolutely. Hope is always a great thing, and we need to have more hope in society across so many levels. And going back to what the bishop said earlier about the 100 years of social justice teaching, I think it's so important to emphasize that this, you know, it's not just Pope Francis who's suddenly emphasizing the poor. And indeed, for many decades, the American bishops have done an excellent job at really giving priority to messages of social justice, that we have to care about the whole person and the poor in particular. But of course, that's also a challenging message for Catholics. So we tell, you know, the Catholics tell us that they love to hear the church emphasizing social justice, but it at a personal level represents a big challenge for many Catholics who are upper class, who are doing very well. And what way are they voting, for example? They may be, you know, when we look at some of the issues going on in Congress, you know, literally this week and recently, and what we expect in the future, got to do with minimum wage and, you know, food benefits for the poor. What's the correct Catholic response to that? You know, that's a difficult moral challenge for a lot of the more affluent members of the Catholic Church, which many are. So just as a lot of Catholics have been easy at dismissing, if you like, or making up their own minds about the Church's teaching on sexual morality, they also make up their own minds about the Church's teaching on the poor. And just because they like the discourse of the Pope on helping the poor doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to make a change in their own lives in terms of how they vote or who they end up giving money to themselves.
That's real interesting. Well, yeah, and I don't have time to ask you before the break, Bishop Labashi, but maybe afterwards, how involved you and other faith leaders in New Hampshire get involved in these issues, you know, not just abortion, but the Medicaid conversation, the cuts to food stamps that Michelle mentioned. So we'll talk about that after a break and take a lot more of your calls. Thanks for that one, Alan. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And we'll hear from you after a short break.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a cross-state battle over air pollution from the Midwest. Then why so little has been done to return stolen art to Holocaust victims and their families. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from your members, and support also comes to us from Hinckley Allen Attorneys at Law, who believe a lawyer should come referred. More information about Hinckley Allen and the clients they serve is online at hinckleyallen.com. And Vineyard Brands, importers of Marcus de Caceres wines from the Rioja region of northern Spain. Information on the web at vineyardbrands.com. Cloudy chance of snow showers for New Hampshire today. High temperatures mid-20s to around 30 degrees. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the first of two shows reflecting on 1 year after the Newtown Massacre. Tomorrow we'll look at gun issues. What has changed? what hasn't. Email us your thoughts before the program to exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire reacts to the new pope. We're looking at what Pope Francis has been saying and why so many people around the world have been paying attention. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And David, before we go back to our listeners, we've got a lot of people who want to jump in our conversation. I did want to ask you about one other point of tension in the Catholic Church, and I'm sure you've covered it. That's the role of women religious leaders, the nuns, accused by top Vatican officials of straying from doctrine. David, what's this all about?
Well, that started actually in early last year. There was the Vatican revealed that there had been an ongoing investigation of this main leadership group of about all the 50,000 women religious nuns and sisters in the United States. And this was an investigation by the Vatican of the group that kind of represents all of them, saying they were too focused on, more or less too focused on social justice. We're saying some things that were doctrinally a little slippery, and we're not emphasizing some of the issues that the Vatican wanted them to emphasize. Came as a real shock, I think. It's fair to say, certainly to the sisters, the American sisters, but also to the bishops, the American bishops, to a great degree. It wasn't, I think, a battle that the bishops themselves had picked, and I think that goes kind of to the dynamic of why Cardinal Bergoglio was elected Pope Francis, in order to kind of decentralize the Vatican oversight a little bit. But that's another topic. But the sisters, this investigation, I think, really kind of backfired to a degree on the church in a PR way, in the sense that people, American Catholics, identify with the nuns and the work that they do and the things we've been talking about for this past hour that Pope Francis has emphasized. And I think that investigation, I think they may have come to a better kind of understanding and dialogue of where that is. And certainly in this era of this new tone that Francis has brought, I think in many ways his approach is very much in line with, the way the sisters, for the most part, approach their ministry. So I suspect we're going to see some, a toning down of the confrontation in that regard.
Do you think so, David? Because I've read others who've said, no, he's more attractive in terms of his words, but in terms of how he's treating the nuns, it's not. It's going to be same old, same old. Michelle, I can hear you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, in fact, a couple of months ago, I read that the Pope he's continuing to have the nuns monitored. So there was a widespread expectation that with Pope Francis that whole issue would be dropped, because one of the points of it was that because of the concerns, which most people would argue are doctrinally unfounded, but because of these concerns that they were deviating from church teaching, that they had going to be monitored by an official at the Vatican, and that is still in place. But I would just add more generally that I think for all his nice words, certainly, Pope Francis still has quite a lot of ambiguity with regard to the role of women in the church. And we just saw that again in his most recent statement on the future of the church, where he, like his predecessors, has said that the question of the ordination of women, for example, as priests, that's a closed question. That's not a question open to discussion. And yet at the same time, he wants women to have a more visible and a more participatory role in the church. And so for a lot of people, women, but also men, because majorities of both women and men in the U.S. for many years now have favored the ordination of women, something that has become even more salient to a lot of Catholics in the pews today with the reduced number of priests available and the reconfiguration of parishes, they're wondering, why don't women have full roles in the church? And certainly that seems to be something that that Francis is not interested in exploring. And he talks about, a few months ago about we need a new theology of woman, which certainly makes me a little nervous, because why are women so different that they need their own theology? Is all the Catholic theology that we have so far, is that only a theology for men? So I think this is one aspect of his speeches and of his thinking that certainly needs more exploration and discussion.
David, quick final thoughts there from you on this as well?
Well, I think Michelle makes some really good points. As far as the investigation of the nuns, I think that's more likely, I'm not a prophet on this, but I think it's more likely to just kind of something he wants to disappear, that would just not really end in any kind of major confrontation. But I do think, you know, she makes some good points in terms of what the questions that people are asking about the role of women in the church. And, you know, he's clearly ruled out the idea of women priests, but he's also, you know, and Vatican officials have said that they want to elevate women to some higher roles, heading Vatican departments, doing some unprecedented things in that regard, which is all well and good, as folks point out. But, again, what about the role of women as Catholic Christians in the church, in ministerial roles? I think he's calling for some more exploration on this, but again, it's one of the most neuralgic topics for us in the West, very much so, but also one that will need some greater exploration.
All right, let's take some more calls. Lots of people who want to jump in our conversation. Teresa's waiting in Goffstown. Hi, Teresa, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Certainly a dynamic conversation. I've been listening intently, but what I wanted to comment on was that I'm a lapsed Catholic due to being divorced, and so I can't participate fully in the sacraments. However, I've been so disappointed over the last year with the sex scandals and the high living lifestyles of diocesan priests. And to see this Pope come in and actually not just talk about change, but actually show the way by living more humbly than in the, you know, most grand area of the Vatican, and giving up his Mercedes and asking his priests and cardinals to do the same thing, I think that the church has become very disconnected from the world.
And Teresa, can I ask you a quick question? And sorry to interrupt you there, but I'm interested in your story. You said that you're disappointed, that you can't participate in the sacrament because you're divorced, and I want to ask Bishop Labashi about that. But you also said you're excited about this new pope. Is that going to make you come back to church?
Well, yes. I think that it may, because I don't just see him speaking. I see him acting.
Okay.
And he's also come out and said that, which is true, that married priests, the celibacy thing is not dogma of the church. It never was, and we all know it.
Well,
and
Teresa, I want to jump in and just get Bishop Labashi on this, and thank you for calling. I also want to make a little more room for a couple other folks to jump in. But this issue of who can receive communion or the sacrament and who can't, Bishop Labashi, Pope Francis said something recently. He said, I'm not sure if I'm phrasing exactly right, but he said the sacrament is not a prize for the perfect. Is there some wiggle room there to open up the giving of communion to people that might have been allowed to have it before?
It's not a prize by any means. It's a gift from God, and it's a gift given to the church. What we find is many times, if there is a divorce, it was not a happy thing to happen. No one wants to break up a home. When we go into marriage, we're looking forward to a happy and bright future. Yet life is complicated, and tragedies do happen in relationships. What we ask is that a person who finds him or herself in a divorce situation and perhaps remarried. Now, if divorced without remarriage, one can continue to receive the sacraments. But remarrying, we say, well, the first marriage, if it were a sacramental marriage, we could not have a second marriage. If it were not a sacramental marriage, then it is possible to declare the intent maybe you thought was there, but maybe it is not fully a sacramental marriage because there was something lacking in that.
I guess I don't understand what that means, a sacramental marriage. I'm wondering if I have one.
Well, in church teaching, you know, a man and woman before two witnesses declare that they will live as husband and wife for the rest of their lives, in good times and bad, sickness and in health, until death do us part. If for any reason someone says, well, I think I'll try it for as long as I can, well, that's not really a full commitment. That's lacking in its integrity as a commitment. Well, we go into a marriage, we don't really look that way, you know, on the face of it. We say, no, I want this marriage to be forever and for joy. I'm looking to build a home and a future. When something goes wrong, was there something at the time when that commitment was being made that would have been in any way marring the ability to make that kind of a commitment. If that is the case, and that was then going to be a precipitating factor for a collapse of a marriage, what we ask is, let's not ignore that. If we can begin to heal that pain, or if we can begin to see how to rebuild, that's why the annulment process is so important as a real cathartic and a careful looking at what happened to each individual person, where it went. And then a marriage after a declaration that I am free to marry, the sacrament is there, but it's with a sense of renewed life.
Well, and the Pope also made those comments about, again, the sacrament is not a prize for the perfect. Who among
right.
us is perfect? He made those comments also in reference to some priests or bishops not allowing Catholic politicians who have voted in favor of abortion to take the sacrament. And this was a big flap, I think, during the John Kerry campaign. What do you think about that? Opening up the sacrament, it's not a prize for the perfect. Even if you're a politician who might have voted for something that goes against Catholic teaching. It sounds like, Bishop Labashe, real quick, and then Michelle, I hear you wanted to jump in.
Very quickly, I'll say that that is a mixed bag all across. I mean, some bishops will say yes, some bishops will say no. Some bishops will say, you know, we really can't get into that. Some bishops will say, well, now instead of a prize, we're offering it as in some way, you know, we're going to withhold it and we're going to make a political statement, God forbid. You know, we wouldn't want to do that with Holy Eucharist, Holy Communion. So it is a very, very highly charged issue.
Yeah, how do you resolve it in your own church here in New Hampshire?
Here, as it comes up, I'm sure people will have their thoughts. So far, it has not become a major issue that has come to my desk. But if it is, I would have to address it individually.
Michelle, I can tell you want to jump in, and then back to our callers.
The sacrament of communion, it's not a weapon to be used against anybody. And I think for the most part, despite those few controversial issues of some bishops, you know, denying politicians, it actually happens quite rarely. And I think quite understandably, because if every priest locally was to not give communion to anyone who's sinning, you know, for example, using contraception would be grounds for that, then there really would be nobody in line, or very few, I think, in line for communion. But going back to your caller and the marriage issue, divorce and annulments, and the bishop's explanation, which is absolutely obviously correct theologically and in terms of canon law, but I think from the point of view of pastoral care, this is really a huge issue for a lot of American Catholics who are divorced and who haven't received annulments, because the annulment process itself is highly complicated on all kinds of levels. And so I would be perhaps maybe overly but somewhat optimistic that this current survey that is coming from Vatican that we're sort of hanging out for and waiting for, that the Vatican has issued to the local diocese, asking them, you know, what are the family arrangements of the people in your diocese, of the people in your diocese parishes? You know, who is cohabiting? Is that what are the pastoral issues around that? What are the pastoral issues about the people who are divorced and remarried and who are not in good standing with the church, about those in gay relationships or in gay marriages? So the fact to me that the Vatican, that the Pope is asking bishops to bring him data on this. Now, of course, these surveys would need to be conducted properly, but the fact that he's actually asking for real live data on what are the living arrangements of people at the local parish level, so that the church, it's not for prurient interest, but so that the church can develop pastoral programs that can somehow, or some new initiatives that can target these different groups and make them feel more included in the church, to bring them back into the church, and also that they can receive the sacraments in the church.
Let's take one more call if we could. This is Rob in Nashua. Hi, Rob. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm one of the members of Lapsed Catholics you referred to earlier, and I just want to say that I am very optimistic and inspired by the things that the Pope's saying, and specifically to one of the responses right before the break about some of these messages being difficult to translate to the popular Catholic audience because of their affluence in general, and these messages about the poor being difficult. I would say that that's actually one of the reasons that, you know, entirely drove me away from the Catholic Church, is that, you know, they're supposed to exist to teach Jesus's message, God's message, and if instead they're only teaching portions of that satisfy and make happy their audience, what use is a teacher in society, in any society, of any subject, if they only teach things that people know, or if they only lead a path that people are already on? And especially if, you know, as a result of that, you end up totally neglecting the point, the reason that you were supposed to be there.
So Francis is pulling the church back to that path, you think, that it should be on, Rob. Sounds like that's what you're saying?
Absolutely. And as far as the difficulty of, it's a difficult message to tell our constituency. You are supposed to be representing Christ, and I've only read, three or four books on him, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. But it seems he wandered around, through a society, within a society that was against most of his teachings. He led a difficult life trying to spread unpopular messages in order to make people better. That's what I was under the impression the church was supposed to be doing, and when it starts doing that again, I'd be happy to bring my children back to it.
Wow, Rob. Well, you got the last word in today. And David Gibson, what do you think? There has been some talk about the so-called Francis effect of getting people like Rob back into the pews. What do you think, David?
Well, I think it's still just starting out. The polls don't show that there's been any particular bump in church attendance. But these things, again, as we talked about, building this kind of culture, these things take a long time. And I think the Francis effect will be real if he's there for a while and can model what he wants to model, appoint bishops who are in the same mold as himself. Look, the bottom line is, which he said from the very beginning of his election, he wants the church to get out of itself. All of these internal disputes and all of these things that we're talking about so often, those are important and those need to be debated, et cetera. But he really wants the church to be an evangelical church, to get beyond itself, to get beyond all of the little strictures and things and liturgical stuff that we're often also debating, and really just get past these things and respond to people and to the needs of the people. And if it can do that, then there may be a real Francis effect.
All right. Well, David Gibson, it's been great having you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
David Gibson, national reporter, New York City for Religion News Service. He's written a few books on Catholic topics recently, a biography of Pope Benedict. Michelle Dillon, always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Nora.
Michelle Dillon, sociology professor at UNH. Her book, co-authored this year, is American Catholics in Transition. And Bishop Peter Labashi, good to have you. Merry Christmas. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Bishop Peter Labashi, 10th Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Manchester, which covers the whole state of New Hampshire. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Nate Graby. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, guns and gun culture, 1 year after Newtown. The tragic events at a Connecticut school that left 20 first graders and 6 educators shot dead sparked a fierce debate around firearms nationally and in New Hampshire. But how much has changed? In the first of a two-part series on Lessons of Newtown, we look at how it shaped our discussion on guns and what, if anything, is different. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 959, the Diane Rehm Show, next at 10. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New Hampshire Catholic Charities. Legacy giving to Catholic Charities supports and strengthens the lives of people facing hardship now and in the future, nh-cc.org. And Heptunes presenting Christmas Celtic Sojourn with Brian O'Donovan at Starbridge Theater, Pinkerton Academy in Derry, December 14th at 3 p.m. Tickets at starbridgetheater.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. For decades, the Environmental Protection Agency has regulated pollution that crosses state lines. Now, 8 states have filed a petition with the EPA asking it to regulate pollution from coal plants in 9 Midwestern and Southern states.